Good morning, Auroville. This is Abhijit with you again from Auroville Radio. And this week, again, I'm back with my series on exploring education in arts, animation, and filmmaking. This week, I'm dwelling in my episode 5, I'm dwelling into what is the studio system in animation. For those of you who would have heard my earlier episode on animation, you would have heard a name, Vincent McKay. Well, Vincent McKay worked more than 1 year personally drawing 24 frames for each second of screen time to make just one animated short film like Gertie the Dinosaur. Other cartoonists like J.R. Bray and Raul Berry realized that mass producing a quantity of animation could be a profitable business. Thus, the first studios to create animated cartoons were founded in 1913. Making possible the creation of volume of animation. The studio system eventually produced a golden age, the period from 1930 to late 1950s, during which even major Hollywood studios released new cartoons to theaters. Animation studios like Disney, Warner Brothers, MGM, and UPA thrived and innovated, and the quality of films was at a peak. In the beginning, the studios, the cartoonists, and the movie industry itself were located in the New York City. The first cartoon series were adapted from major newspaper comic strips, Mutt and Jeff, Crazy Celt, and the Cats and Jammer Kids, or arose from the pens of New York-based print cartoonists like Gregory LaCava, Pat Sullivan, and Paul Terry. Though still prized as the forerunners of modern cartoons, these cartoons displayed little of the skill and artistry of modern cartoons or of Vincent McKay. McKay berated his colleagues at a testimonial dinner, saying, "Animation should be an art, but what you fellows have done is to make it into a trade." Quality returned when Otto Messmer breathed life and personality into Felix the Cat, whose adventures in the 1920s were remarkably well-crafted as well as funny. The Fleischer Studio was responsible for further advances in both animation technique and plot development. But the cartoon as we know it today was pushed forward by a man who we all know as Walt Disney. A relative youngster to the field when he entered it in 1923, Disney was determined to make his rival animation studios quality. By 1927, his Hollywood studio was producing the most sophisticated cartoons on the screen. His desire to compete with and better his rivals led to his popularizing synchronized sound cartoons in 1928. Throughout the 1930s, the Disney studio dominated in the field of innovation and direction. It was Walt Disney who brought fine artistry to the trade of animation, providing training for his artists and appreciation and support for their work. As Chuck Jones said, "Because of Disney, people sat up and took notice of the cartoon. He prepared, fought, and bled for a ground where the artist could flourish and where a new art form could grow, not only at his studio, but throughout the world." Every other studio began imitation series based on Disney's lead. Where Disney had Silly Symphonies, Warner Brothers released Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies. MGM began Happy Harmonies. Columbia had Color Rhapsodies. Paramount presented Color Classics. And RKO weighed in with Rainbow Parade cartoons. Fairy tales and fables were adapted in color cartoons, and happy-go-lucky Mickey Mouse imitations danced in the black and white releases. By the time Disney premiered his first feature-length film, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, in late 1937, the other studios had granted the crown to Uncle Walt. The Fleischer Studio was Disney's biggest rival during the 1930s, with Betty Boop and Popeye eventually surpassing the Disney characters in popularity. The rough but highly cartoony artwork was characteristic of the New York studio and provided the cartoons with an individual identity that other studios lacked. Despite the crudeness of the artwork, the early Fleischer cartoons contain a surreal atmosphere that gives them a depth and sophistication because they can be enjoyed on many levels. They have become cult classics. But they also succumbed to the pressure of keeping up with the Disneys. And as the 30s wore on, the Fleischer cartoons became cuter and more standard. The Warner Brothers cartoons were the most influential animated shorts of the 1940s. Tex Avery and zany Termite Terrence crew decided to ignore the beauty and polish of the emerging Disney style and concentrate on something Walt and his followers were leaving behind. Comedy. Avery and his comrades in arms, Frank Tashlin, Bob Clampett, Chuck Jones, and Fritz Feiling, dished out funnier drawings, outrageous gags, and bigger laughs, and introduced us to a menagerie of cartoon superstars more popular today than ever before. Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, The Roadrunner, Tweety, Pepe Le Pew, and many more. More than one third of the most popular cartoons were produced by this studio, evidence of the talent involved and the popularity of their work. Musician Carl Stelling, voice actor Mel Blanc, and dozens of great animators, including Rod Scheibner, Virgil Ross, Ben Washam, Abe Levito, and Ken Chaplin, and storymen including Michael Maltese, Ted Pierce, and Warren Foster, were among the crew working with the legendary Warner directors. Their work is known for its comedy, but it never lacked in quality. MGM also went for the laughs after the disappointing results with Hugh Herman and Rob Isling's Disney-style shorts in the 1930s. The directing duo of Joseph Barbera and William Hanna gave the studio a starring cat and mouse team we all know and love as Tom and Jerry, and earned 7 Academy Awards. MGM also gave Tex Avery, who moved to MGM from Warner Brothers in 1942, a chance to perfect gag cartoons with a series of films that begat Droopy, Screwy Squirrel, and the eye-popping Red Hot Riding Hood. United Productions of America, also known as UPA, began a series of stylish short subjects released by Columbia Pictures that influenced every studio from Hollywood to Zagreb, Yugoslavia during the 1950s. Based on limited animation and modern graphic art, UPS cartoons were popular with the critics and the public, with characters such as the nearsighted Mr. Magoo and Gerald McBoing Boing leading the way. Hollywood cartoon studios of the Golden Age turned cartoons into an art form. The pioneer animators were a creative community who inspired each other towards greatness, and in turn, their best work continues to influence the best work in animation even today. The personal styles of cartoon directors first became prevalent in the 1940s. Clampett, Jones, and Avery emerged and influenced the way gag cartoons were constructed. But UPA in the 50s was the true turning point. It proved that individual animation design, far from the lush Disney styles, could be popular. Chuck Jones and John Hubley began very stylish characters and abstract backgrounds in the early 1940s. World War II forced animators to work faster on training films and learn how to communicate information quicker with limited animation and modern graphics. When UPA began making theatrical shorts after the war, Stephen Busuto, John Hubley, Bob Cannon, and their crew used these economic methods to create stylish films that influenced animation around the world. The UPA studio opened the door to different techniques and ideas, from the simple line art of Gerard McBoing Boing and Thurber's A Unicorn in the Garden to the abstract renderings of the Telltale Heart. A new message went out to the animation filmmakers. A backlash formed against Disney realism as artists learned that the medium could be used for personal artistic inventions. Since then, the diverse styles of animation have proved to be unlimited, and independent animation has provided a cornucopia of different styles from artists everywhere. Personal visions have been realized in short films and full-length features, from the Pannonia Studio in Hungary to the famed Zagreb Studio of Yugoslavia, with works sponsored by such institutes as the National Film Board of Canada and London's Channel 4. Well, that brings us to an end of this episode. In the next episode for animation, I will delve into the world of animation for television. Thank you.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.